This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL Urbana. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. These are the opening paragraphs of a story reported by the Associated Press yesterday. Dateline, London. Shipping fresh fish to the United States is an even trickier business than usual. After U.S. airports closed last week, icy boxes of Shetland Island salmon sat idle at London's Heathrow Airport as their shippers waited anxiously for flights to resume. The stench of rotten fish offered just a hint of the potential problems ahead for companies across the world that do business with the United States. As jitters from Tuesday's attacks set in, fears are growing that the world's already weakening economy could skid into a recession. And in an increasing globalized market, the ties of trade and finance binding companies and countries could transmit the economic pain more widely than ever before. This afternoon, in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine, we look into the economic effects of last week's terrorist attack on the U.S. With the help of two University of Illinois economists, we'll get an overview of the internal and external, local and global impacts of the attack. Our guests are Werner Baer and Hadi Asfahani. Werner Baer tomorrow will hold the Jorge Paulo Lehman Chair in Economics. Hadi Asfahani is an associate professor of economics at the University of Illinois. Listeners, your questions and comments are encouraged. I look forward to hearing from you. In Champaign-Urbana, our telephone number is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Professors, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us this afternoon. A couple of questions at the top that go together. We've been hearing the words fragile, and resilient. How fragile is the U.S. economy today, or how resilient is it today?
Well, it seems to me that the economy was at the beginning of a recession when this occurred. I think the reason was there was an overexpansion in many sectors, especially in the computer sector and the high-tech sectors. And it was only natural for this exuberance, this overinvestment, that there would be a reaction. So this incident, the tragic incident of last week, really might emphasize, let's say, the downward trend in the growth of the economy, or maybe even for a few months a decline in output. But there are two ways of looking at it as far as I'm concerned. On the one hand, there might be a decline in consumer confidence. What kept up the economy was, although investment had gone down, was a substantial continuation in consumer expenditures. It could be that consumer confidence will have been shaken by the events of last week. That's the downside. But on the upside, you could say that there will be substantially more expenditures on defense by the government. This will have a substantial impact on the defense industry and will have a multiplier effect throughout the economy. Certainly, the reconstruction that will occur in New York will affect the construction industry and various other sectors that are connected with it. So you could paint both a positive and a negative scenario.
I agree with a lot of that. I just want to add that we're talking about changes a little bit up and a little bit down to a large extent in terms of fragility versus resilience. I would describe the U.S. economy as very resilient. There's going to be a slowdown, but it's going to be just a slowdown, not the Great Depression. And we should remember that right now our unemployment rate, for example, is still around 5%, which is far below that it was ever was since the mid-70s.
Mm. We've heard a fair amount about moving into recession or tipping into recession. Some have suggested we are in a recession. How is a recession defined?
Well, usually the recession officially is defined when you have two consecutive quarters of negative growth rate. This hasn't happened exactly. We're on the border of it. But I would say that we are the fact that there's been a huge amount of layoffs already prior to the tragic incident of last week really shows that maybe the growth rate, the exuberance of the economy for the time being has come to an end. The other problem that we're facing is that the Japanese economy has been in the doldrums for almost a decade. And the same thing is true in Europe. So what you've had in the last few months is that the only economy that still was displaying a substantial growth rate was the American economy. But if you have the American economy slowing down and the European economy slowing down and the Japanese economy not coming out of the doldrums, then we have a problem.
Mm. Let me ask another kind of economics 101 kind of question, Professor Asfahani. How does a recession differ from depression? And what is the situation in Japan, as Professor Baer mentioned?
Well, in the case of Japan, it's been a prolonged slow growth or even declines in some years. And that's now more than a decade. Obviously, that could cause big problems, not just in the economy, but political problems, as we've seen, political problems that the ruling party has had in Japan. Recessions are a few quarters, a year or so, and then followed by booms. Depressions are prolonged and very deep. That's just the magnitude that makes them different.
Mm. What kind of recession is forecast for us now?
Everybody seems to be kind of going behind the events in the sense that they see the slowdown and then start predicting recessions. You know, if you go back a year ago, people thought that the boom will continue, and then you look at the forecast 6 months later, you see they see lower numbers for economic growth, and then they forecast lower growth and so forth. But still, I think most economists would be thinking in terms of just a recession over a year or so, and then slow growth back, probably not a sort of bounce back. It's just slow recovery.
In other words, maybe unemployment going up from 9%, maybe to 7%, certainly not to the type of depression unemployment you've had in the 1930s when 25% of the population was unemployed.
Hmm. How do economists make these kinds of forecasts?
Well, part of it is, of course, by looking at history and modeling and sort of knowing how different agents in the economy operate, how they make decisions, etc. And they try to forecast the factors that might be affecting decisions of individuals or companies and various groups, consumers, producers, investors, etc. Part of it is just guesswork. You have to make a forecast about, you know, what will be, say, the price of oil over the next couple of years. And that is a lot of guesswork. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows what those trends are.
But then we also look at the capacity. I mean, when there's investment, we create capacity. And will this capacity be used up? So that's one thing. There's been a substantial amount of investment expansion, especially in the high-tech industry. And the question was, is this justified given the growth in demand? So that's one factor. The other factor to take into account is the consumer. The consumers have been very active making expenditures and have kept the economy growing in the last year. But the question is, does this event that we had last week cause a reevaluation by many consumers and figuring that maybe they haven't saved enough in case they'll become unemployed, in case there's trouble in the economy? And that's one of the bothersome thing. How is the consumer going to react? Now, maybe the the problem that we've had in the United States is there's a tremendous growth in the debt, in the consumer debt. And it could be that now many people realize, well, we are up into our necks in debt. We ought to maybe refrain from buying. And if they refrain from buying, that also will substantially decrease sales, decrease production, and maybe decrease investment plans.
Hmm. Have we any information at this point in terms of what consumers are doing with that tax refund or prepay that we got?
Early reports indicate that they're spending it all very quickly, but this was up to a couple of weeks ago. Although, you know, the amount may not be that big anyway, and it's very difficult to tell whether when they spend that check, you know, are they saving somewhere else? Are they just using it to buy something that they would have bought anyway? It's difficult to tell, but initial indications is that, yes, that has been a lot of it has been spent already.
Now, another problem that we're facing is that the dollar, at least in the last few years, has become overvalued. There's been a tremendous rise of the dollar relative to the euro. That's made our products not very competitive in the international market. So the growth rate of exports has really not been very high. And we have a huge trade deficit. And that's been that could be a really problem in the future. With the crisis overseas, however, the dollar has weakened. And I think a weakening dollar is great because a weakening dollar will make us more competitive and increased exports will create more job and might be one instrument of countercyclical policies decreasing, let's say, our trend to go into a recession.
How also will this affect trade in terms of how much we're, given that we as consumers are responsible for driving a large part of the economy, I don't know that if we slow down that spending, won't that also affect economies around the world in terms of what they will sell us
and what we will buy? That's a major concern in other countries, that if the U.S. economy goes into a recession, already the slowdown has caused trouble around the world. East Asia has seen its exports decline very sharply. Europe also is experiencing some troubles because they can't sell as much goods as they thought they could to the United States. With the stock market also declining, the consumers are going to feel poorer. So it's not just the debt side of it. On the wealth side, they feel less wealthy. And that is going to have an impact on their spending behavior. So demand by consumers is going to go down.
Yesterday, we heard a lot of talk about people standing firm and holding their stocks as a matter of doing the right thing, as something that would be patriotic to do. Could we see, what are your thoughts on that? And it seems to me that the markets are not based on patriotism. They're based on self-interest. So what do you make of that story that came to us yesterday?
Well, I agree with you. I think the attitude of the average stockholder is to protect his wealth. Even though they might claim that they're patriotic when it comes to the decision of their personal welfare, patriotism might go by the wayside. I mean, I can see that people are unemployed. People lose their job. And if they lose their job and they have some stocks, they might have to sell the stock just in order to make payments on their mortgage and so on and so forth. So I don't quite see that the patriotism is going to cause a recovery in the stock market. The stock market really, the value of the stock really depends on how the companies are doing, the sales of the companies. The profit of the companies or the expectation of profit of the companies.
The only thing I would add to that is that in events like these that nobody knows what's going to happen and there's a lot of uncertainty, you might do something just because of some ideology or some belief that you have, not out of any assessment of the real situation, because there's no way we can predict the next few months or even or next year or so. This is a difficult situation, so people might actually say, okay, you know, today I'm going to decide that I'm patriotic, I'm not going to trade my stock or sell my stock. But over a longer term, in a few months, it's going to be market as usual. It's just these few days that might, some ideology beliefs might become important.
Yeah.
It's also important to remember that a major player are the funds, the various funds. And if you're responsible for a fund, can you afford to be too patriotic when you're dealing with monies that belong to you, the millions or the hundreds of thousands of customers who have invested in your fund? So it's not so easy to combine patriotism with looking out for the welfare of your investors.
Yeah, and you probably wouldn't want to sell when the market is going down so quickly. But
unless you have to.
Yeah, unless
right.
you have to.
Or maybe, you know, if you have some assessment of the situation that things are deteriorating and will deteriorate further, then you may try to be faster than others in selling your stocks. But in the current situation, there's so many factors pointing in different directions that it's just the only thing I think that drove down the market sharply yesterday was uncertainty, because just people didn't know where it's going to go. So some people thought to be on the safe side, let's sell.
Mm. And today, though, things seem to be stabilizing somewhat. And the Dow is up, the NASDAQ is up, the S&P 500 is up.
Yeah, there's going to be some learning about the situation that's going to drive down and up the stock market over the next few weeks.
Also, some recovery in the airline stocks.
Right, right. But a lot of it is just reaction and quick reaction to events that we cannot assess very easily over just a few days. It's going to take time till we know the full impact.
Mm. Now, another important factor is that all this worry about what's happening to the budget, whether we're going to maintain a surplus or the surplus is going to disappear, that worry seems to have evaporated. I think there's no compunction about increasing government expenditures, especially in certain areas like defense. And if the government budget surplus will disappear, or it might even go into deficit, I think this is not going to be taken advantage of by the opposition in attacking, let's say, the Bush administration of throwing away the budget surplus that they inherited. But rather, right now, the important thing is to get the economy and the nation moving again. And if this results in increased spending and a budget deficit, that might be a good counter-cyclical measure that might help to pull the economy out of an incipient recession.
How might the attack affect the economy of the Midwest and you know, our hometown, our community?
Werner?
Well, it depends. I mean, first of all, the Midwest has a fairly diversified economy. To the extent that there'll be increased defense expenditures, there are an awful lot of high-tech companies that are going to benefit from it. There are a lot of companies in the Midwest that are defense-related. So it seems to me that these increased government expenditures certainly will benefit the Midwest. It could be, on the other hand, that the reluctance of consumers to spend will manifest itself in a decline in the sales of automobiles. And obviously, automobiles is an important sector in not only in Michigan, but even here in Illinois. I mean, we do have the Mitsubishi factory, mm-hmm. et cetera, and the many parts producers. So I would say we're a fairly well-diversified economy. And from that point of view, all the negatives and positives of the current situation that we've mentioned before also apply to the Midwest.
Right. I would add one other factor that I think is important. If there's any major conflict around the Persian Gulf area as a result of trying to get bin Laden or whatever, that could cause the price of oil to go up, even if the governments around the world do make an effort to make sure that trade routes are open and installations are safe, etc. Still, that's going to be costly. That's going to it's going to raise the speculation that there might be a problem, and therefore the price of gas and oil is going to go up, and that will have a major slowing down effect on the U.S. economy.
But it might benefit the Midwest. For example, if it goes up, there might be an increased demand for gasohol, and that might profit, for example, ADM in Decatur.
That could be right.
So, and Midwestern agriculture.
But overall, the U.S. economy, part of the current slowdown, in fact, is related to the oil price increase over the past 3 years. That was one of the factors that contributed to this slowdown. So, and U.S. economy as a whole slowing down, it will affect us, though there are some positive sides, too.
This is the Afternoon Magazine, and today on the program, we're looking into the economic effects of last week's terrorist attack on the U.S. Joining us here today in the studio, two University of Illinois economists, Hadi Esfahani. He is an associate professor of economics, and Werner Baer is also with us this afternoon. Tomorrow, he will hold the Jorge Paulo, I hope I'm pronouncing this right.
Jorge Paulo.
Jorge Paulo, Lehman Chair in Economics. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, I invite your telephone calls, your questions and comments. In Champaign-Urbana, our number 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 1-800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. We've heard the reports of the impact on the airlines. They're laying off employees. One airline that was in bankruptcy trying to reorganize midway threw in the towel and said they were shutting down. Now, today, we've seen some good news, or the airlines have seen some good news on Wall Street. What do you think lies ahead for that part of the industry?
There are two things. Number one, are they going to lose passengers? Obviously, they will in the short run. The short run, there are lots of people going to get scared, or going to postpone trips, or and so that's going. But I think the as we move on, you know, businessmen have to travel. People want to take vacation. I think the idea of staying home, spending your vacations in a neighborhood of about 100 miles is not going to really fly with the average consumer. So I think in the as the weeks go by, wouldn't be surprised if the demand for air travel would rise again. So I'm fairly optimistic from that, from the demand side. The problem is the cost side, and as Hadi just said before, if oil prices go up, if fuel prices go up, this is a major cost item for the airlines, and that might result in a very difficult situation for the airlines.
The security costs also would add up, both in terms of the time that you have to spend, to go through checkpoints, etc., and also the additional personnel and expertise needed to make sure that flights are safe. So that adds up to the cost that ultimately the consumer has to pay for it. Probably the federal government is going to come in, at least for a while, to help out. But over longer term, that cost has to be borne by the consumer. And that will have some effect on travel. But this is not going to be a major decline in air travel.
Might there be other industries that the government would step in and give aid to?
Yes, I think that other industries that somehow are going to be affected by travel might also get help from the government.
The insurance industry.
Insurance industry as well, that's right. That's a good point.
An estimate of $10 billion in claims is floating out there.
Although that's only an estimate, because a lot of insurance contracts do not cover terrorist acts, and it's not
or
very clear.
Or wartime situations.
Right, or war-like situations, exactly. And it will take a while before we know exactly what the cost is to the insurance companies.
The attack last week closed markets not only here but abroad in Thailand, Taiwan, Malaysia. What have you seen as you watched markets in Asia? How are they faring?
Well, they've been weak for a long time. Again, what's happening in Asia, I don't think is so much related to the what happened last week. As Hadi mentioned before, Japan has had a recession for a decade. The many other Asian economies really haven't totally recovered from the impact of the crisis of 3 years ago, the Asian crisis of 3 years ago. On the other hand, let's remember one economy that's been growing very rapidly has been China. China still had a growth rate. It went down, but when it went down, it was about 8% a year in real terms, and that is a very good growth rate. And China still represents a tremendous market for everyone concerned, for both the United States and Europe. And as long as China keeps growing, and I think it will keep on growing, that certainly will have a positive effect on U.S. exports, on U.S. investments, and returns to investments.
How have the markets fared in Europe?
they also have gone down similarly. A lot of this, I think, is concern about the U.S. economy, that the U.S. economy is going to slow down and therefore it's going to affect their exports, and that is reflected in the stock markets. It's just an add-on to the trade that was the trend that was already in place, sort of slow growth and declining markets. This is just another concern that has brought them down somewhat.
There have been concerns about Japan and its banking system. What are the troubles with Japan's banking system, and how might this situation affect the banking system in that nation?
Well, no, the big problem in Japan in the banking system has been they made some very bad loans, and they're stuck with huge amounts of non-performing loans. What they need is a restructuring of the banking system. The type of financing they will offer, the type of sectors and type of firms they will support. So basically what Japan has been facing and not been doing for a long time is to come to grips with the very precarious state of the assets of most of the banks. So this restructuring was needed, and I don't think that it's going to be much affected by what happened last week. I think it's still, if the government is resolved to make some major institutional changes, this might certainly improve the long-term prospects for the Japanese economy and then result in a substantial recovery. And if they recover substantially, this certainly will add renewed strength to all industrial economies.
Are those institutional changes underway? Have they begun?
Well, they have begun, but they've been very slow from what I can tell. I'm an expert on Latin America, so I cannot give you many details. But from what I've read, what I've heard is that the new prime minister has made a special effort to try to come to grips with the restructuring that is needed in the Japanese financial system.
I think that Japanese have learned over the years what the problem is, and it's just been very difficult to deal with it. The new prime minister understands what the issue is, and certainly the reforms that he's proposing will address the problem. It's going to take a while till everybody else involved in policymaking becomes convinced.
Let's talk with a listener who's waiting to talk with us on line one on a cell phone. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
All righty. I heard some reports this morning early from financial markets overseas, and I wondered if your guest could clarify whether this is rumor or what, that large amounts of money were positioned to profit from the decline in airline stocks previous to this attack on Tuesday, and there's some suspicion that this might be associated somehow with the terrorist networks, but the financial end of the terrorist situation, the terrorist organization. Did you already talk about that?
No, we haven't. And I think this was an article that appeared yesterday in the New York Times as well.
Well, maybe. I mean, if they are as diabolical, even more diabolical than we heard up to now, maybe some of the terrorists who decided not to sacrifice themselves were selling short. They knew it was going to happen, and therefore they were selling stocks that they didn't have, airline stocks. And then as soon as they dramatically dropped, they bought them in order to make a huge profit. Maybe that has happened. Maybe that's what the article was alluding to.
We don't know yet. I mean, this is a speculation about some transactions that in Japan especially started this idea that maybe there's somebody tried to profit from this. But it's going to be very difficult to sort of trace these things.
Very interesting. I want to thank the listener for his call this afternoon. Other calls are welcome in Champaign-Urbana. Our number, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. This afternoon on the Afternoon Magazine, we're talking about the economic effects of last week's terrorist attack on the U.S. Latin America.
What? Yes. What can I tell you about Latin America?
What is its situation?
Well, certainly Latin America was facing severe problems. You had the problem of Argentina. which has the currency board system and which was in deep trouble because of the huge foreign debt which both the private and the public sector had accumulated. And the IMF and the United States were trying to help remedy the situation, and certainly what's happened now, if it results in a prolonged recession, this is certainly not going to help the exports of Argentina. The same thing, Brazil was going strong last year and the beginning of this year, but because of the Argentinian crisis and the slowdown in the growth rate of the American economy, they too are experiencing substantial declines in the rate of growth and also declines in investment. And in Mexico, which was doing great, expanding at a very fast clip for the last few years, it now is experiencing major difficulties because of the slowdown of the American economies, because 80% of Mexican exports go to the United States.
How might the economies of developing nations be affected by this recession?
It will affect them, although in different ways, and some of them actually might benefit. If, for example, if the oil price goes up, a lot of OPEC countries will experience, will get more money and will experience growth because they will have more to invest and more to import and get their excess capacities utilized. So if some countries are going to benefit from this if there is an increase in price of oil. Otherwise, the fact that U.S. economy slows down basically has a negative impact all over the world.
Well, not only negative from their exports, but also it could cause, if you have an industrial recession in the United States and also Europe, you have a substantial decline in demand for raw materials like copper, for example. Which is very important to the Chilean economy. And so if you have the commodity prices decline, this certainly also will contribute to a slowdown in the emerging market economies that do not have any oil.
The Fed cut short-term interest rates by a half point an hour before trading began yesterday. How important was that move?
I think that was a very good signal that the Fed, first of all, predicted that there will be selling short in the market, and they wanted to show that they're willing to cut the interest rate and they're not concerned about inflation at this point. The economy's inflation is under control, so they can cut interest rates and stimulate demand. It showed their resolve and their awareness of the situation. The Fed, this was similar to other situations, for example, in '87 when the stock market fell sharply, the Fed immediately injected a lot of liquidity into the market, and that helped minimize the effect and bring about confidence that somebody is in charge of monetary policy that knows what they're doing and thinks long term and acts very quickly and very effectively when there's a need. So I think this was a very good move on the part of the Fed.
However, let's take into account the Fed has been cutting the interest rates for quite a long time, for quite a few months now, and the impact really hasn't been felt. I mean, the slowdown of the economy has continued in spite of the decline in interest rates. So the question is, to what extent will interest rates influence investment, will influence in the rate at which consumer buy, let's say, consumer durable goods? And that we're not clear about this. So some people will say, well, there's a lag. There's a 6 to 7 months lag between changing the interest rates, cutting it, and having an impact on investment or consumer expenditures. Well, that could be. But on the other hand, there are other variables that influence both investment and consumer expenditures, especially now expectation not based on interest rates, but really expectation based on the political climate in the world.
Yeah, the only sort of positive side of it that I would add to this is that the fact if the Fed acts in an intelligent and capable way and people get the sense that the Fed knows what it's doing, that will help build confidence. So a lot of these uncertainties that Werner is mentioning, which are very important and major factors in driving investment, consumer spending, etc., if the public gets a sense that the Fed at least acts, knows what it's doing, it helps a lot.
Mm. As you mentioned, that this is one of a number of cuts we've seen in recent months, and I believe it's the eighth cut, yes, if I'm remembering correctly. Yes. So if we go back to the first cut, I would imagine that it's now at least been We've seen that lag time.
Yeah, that's true. The lag time has gone by. I mean, there ought to be some impact, but the one impact may be the cuts were responsible partially for the fact that consumer spending until very recently didn't go down. And after all, for the last year, it was consumer spending that kept the economy going. And if, however, now the interest rates have little impact on consumer spending and investment doesn't pick up, then we have a problem.
Another way of looking at this is that if we had kept the interest rate as high as it was last year, we might have experienced a recession by now. But this is just slowdown so far.
Do you anticipate other interest rate cuts?
Oh, I think so. Yeah. I think certainly in the next few weeks, if the stock market doesn't pick up and if there's a substantial growth in unemployment, I wouldn't be surprised if they will continue to cut.
Okay. But I just wanted to add that they will probably cut the interest rate further, but what will get us out of recession is not going to be any further cuts probably. This is just going to stabilize, and we just need the confidence gained. Some other factor be the engine of growth.
Yeah. Besides cutting interest rates, does the Fed have other arrows in its quiver?
Well, it can set the reserve requirement, but I think that is not an instrument that's used very often. And then, of course, open market operations. By buying and selling bonds, government bonds in the open market, it can affect also the interest rates. Often when it lowers interest rates like the discount rate at the same time, one should watch what it does with its portfolio. If it wants to stimulate the economy, it'll be actively buying bonds in the market in order to place more money into the economy. And I'm sure that's what's happening right now.
Let's talk with another listener on the toll-free line in Bloomington. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I would like to bring out the fact that the Federal Reserve Board was raising interest rates a year ago at this time. Why? Was it purely because of the election?
Is the question over? Okay, let me give a possible answer. In the first quarter of 2000, we had an enormous growth in GDP, which could have been very inflationary. At the same time, oil prices were going up very quickly, and that could have been also inflationary. And given the experience we've had in the 70s and to some extent in the 80s, we don't want to see inflation. It is very costly to bring down, and the Fed was acting only on that basis. I don't think it had anything to do with elections.
Does the caller want to?
I think it was totally, totally connected with the election. Thank you.
Okay, that's fine.
How does the Fed decide on a course of action?
Well, the Fed has a board that meets, that examines the economic situation. It has a huge technical staff working for it. So the deliberations are on a high technical level. I really would not agree with the caller that politics was an element. As a matter of fact, had politics been involved, since the Democrats were still in power, the Democrats presumably would have used their power to convince the Fed to lower interest rates rather than raise interest rates in order to increase the chances of the Democratic candidate to win. And yet the contrary happened. They raised interest rates. So I think from what I've seen in the past that there is relatively little political pressure applied to our central bank. Our central bank is a fairly neutral institutions, really, that is, in general, with maybe a few exceptions here and there, above politics.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it's not just one person. We have come to know Alan Greenspan as the person who mm-hmm. represents the Fed, but there's a committee there, the board, that decides, and the economists who are on that board are well known, and we know them professionally, and They're people of very high integrity, including the chairman, and we follow their decisions on each occasion. And there's a lot of consensus usually around their decisions. Among economists, there's consensus that this is the right thing to do.
Let's talk with another listener in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes. I have a question. The Fed has favored interest manipulation to control the economy. It's been suggested that tax cuts could also be used for this. And I suppose spending increases would be another way. I guess I just observed that it seems to me the problem with tax cuts is it's rather difficult to raise the taxes later when you want to control inflation. But I'd be interested in your thoughts.
No, I agree with you. I think the that's one of the big problems of tax cuts. They're flexible downward, but not so flexible upward. And there's no doubt about that. And also but on the other hand, it is often said, especially to get out of the recession, that a fiscal policy that is a combination of tax cuts and increased government expenditures is more powerful, has a more powerful impact on the economy than the manipulation of interest rates. So now there's a big controversy among economists, and it's very hard to resolve. Does this tax cut that we've had recently, is that big enough to really substantially affect the spending of consumers? That's a big question mark. But on the other hand, as I said at the beginning of this interview today, the increased expenditures related to defense expenditures and reconstruction in New York, all these type of expenditures can have a substantial expansionary effect on the economy. So it seems to me, from my point of view, fiscal policy, especially increased expenditures, could certainly help to get the economy out of the current semi-recession.
In terms of the question, which is very interesting, I think it's important to take into account the fact that it's not easy to change the tax policy. And we know that fiscal policy, tax cuts or increases or government expenditure changes, are effective if we somehow make sure that they are short-term. That, for example, right now we're getting into a recession. If we spend more within next couple of years or within next year and give a tax cut only this year, then it's going to be effective, help us get out of the recession. But if we give a tax cut and this continues into the future, even during the booms, and then we cannot raise the tax, that is going to have a dampening effect. Even right now, people understanding that this is going to cause trouble down the road is going to have a reverse effect on the economy. So it's very important that if one uses fiscal policy for stabilizing the economy, the policy itself is viewed as short-term, not a permanent policy.
Let me say something else about fiscal policy. Is difficult to implement. I mean, to lower taxes, it has to go through Congress. To increase expenditures, that has to go through Congress. So it might be a powerful instrument, but it cannot be used as flexibly as the Federal Reserve Bank. All you need with the Federal Reserve Bank is for the board to meet to make a decision, and bingo, the next day you raise or lower the interest rates.
Yeah, it takes Congress some time to move legislation through, make a decision. One last question before we have to wrap it up this afternoon. Do you think we might turn inward and turn away from globalization as a result of last week's events?
Not at all. I think our economy already is very tightly knit into the world economy. The Boeing airplane, for example, is not an American airplane. It has a lot of parts and components that are imported from abroad. The Airbus is not just a European airplane. It had a lot of American components that are imported. You look at any product in the industrial world, and you'll see a tremendous interrelationship. So isolationism, economic isolationism, is just an impossibility as far as I'm concerned.
Certainly, trying to become isolationist is that's out of the question. That's not going to happen because we're so integrated nowadays. There might be some forces that will try to reduce or prevent further globalization. And there are already those forces were working even without this event. In fact, the IMF and World Bank mm-hmm. have canceled their meeting
in Washington next month
because of this event, and also they were anticipating a big turnout of anti-globalization forces there. So there are some these forces that are working in the other direction. There might be some slowdown in globalization. However, I think that the forces for globalization will continue to take us forward.
And we don't just have to look at the industrial sector. Just look at the farmers out here in Illinois. A large proportion of the farm products are exported. Without the foreign markets, the agricultural economy would really be in very deep trouble. So all of us are involved in globalization.
Well, that's where we have to leave it. Werner Baer and Hadi Asfahani, thank you very much for talking with us this afternoon.
It was a pleasure.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. Thank you.